This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 28th of April, 2023. Very intense market action yesterday as we see a rally that erases the prior 2 days of negative energy, closing strongly. And in the case of the S&P 500, not that close to the highs, although we're basically about 1% away, but much closer on the NASDAQ 100. Peter, this has to be on earnings coming in quite strong, I suppose, is the key driver here. Even though, ironically, we talked the last couple of days about negative sessions, but then mega caps helping things after the close. We saw one of the big mega caps, Amazon, actually disappointing badly after the close, but its weight was not sufficient to sort of drag down sentiment that much coming into this morning in Europe.
No, the Amazon earnings, which we will talk about later in the podcast, failed, or you could say drowned in the good news from Caterpillar, Procter & Gamble, MasterCard. All three companies saying that 2023 has started quite robustly and it's looking strong. Caterpillar even said that, you know, things are looking much better for 2023 than they expected. They're still seeing volume growth despite pretty significant price hikes. They're seeing government infrastructure projects taking over from weakness in the private sector. So good vibes there. Procter & Gamble put out an organic revenue growth of 7% versus 4% expected. So that total a copy of what we have seen from McDonald's and other consumer-oriented companies. Consumers just doing good. And MasterCard as well said in their conference call that, you know, restaurant bookings and travel cross-border payments much stronger than expected, and a good start so far to the year. And you can see on slide two the different theme baskets that did well. So the mega caps are really up there, powering on. And that's, of course, what is driving the market action here. And then, but John, I think that it also warrants a little bit of a commentary on what happened in China. You had the Chinese Politburo out saying that, you know, demand is still insufficient and weak, and then they're looking to do more stimulus. And I think it fits very well with the comments from Caterpillar. They said that Chinese activity levels right now are 5 to 10% below the seasonality level that you would expect at this point of the year. So something is definitely brewing, or is not brewing correctly in China right
now. Yeah, and we could infer that from what we have noted before, and that was that frustration that if we are supposed to be seeing a Chinese reopening, we haven't seen it spill over sufficiently into the commodity markets, into metals prices, into things like the Australian dollar, which would all be linked to that as well. And Ola, you've got on slide six some thoughts on that, but there's a lot to cover here today. So we have this story that's very interesting. We also have Q1 earnings rolling along, and we have the Bank of Japan with a massive surprise overnight. But let's go to your slide six, Ola, since we're on the topic already, Chinese stimulus. You know, given what Peter just said, we haven't seen anything coming into the market action overnight so far in the metal space, have we?
No, and we can see it's the China-centric commodities in the mining space that has led the weakness we've seen this month. I'll just put in a table just highlighting some of the major miners and their performance this April, and you can see iron ore appears among the product they produce, most of them, and we can also see iron ore is down around 8%, almost just kissed $100 a ton early in the week, and China accounts for 70% of global iron ore demand, so that just highlights the story of where steel demand is weak at this point in time. Also highlighting what has perhaps caught the market a little bit by surprise, that this recovery or growth recovery in China is not as commodity intensive as previous ones, especially one after the great financial crisis in 2008, where we saw this massive sprint across the industrial metal space. But I think it just highlights that we have to be quite selective because inventory levels, if you just look on the right hand side there, they are still very low, and any pickup in demand from here that will continue to deplete some of these inventory levels.
All right, I think I want to take, Peter, your whole earnings bit all in one big chunk. So we're going to go a little bit out of order here because I just want to get to this Bank of Japan story. It's one of the bigger moves we've seen in FX in a directional sense and in one day in quite some time. So overnight, we have the Bank of Japan meeting, and there were very low expectations that this Bank of Japan meeting would produce something, perhaps at the margin, traders hoping for some kind of guidance on, you know, how willing the new Ueda leadership was to tweak policy, et cetera. what it got was pretty dovish. So let's go through this. Go through this. Why the you know the yen is 1.4% weaker versus the dollar this morning in the wake of all this. They did remove the almost absurd language about keeping the policy rate currently negative 10 basis points at current levels or lower. So that was removed. You know, net hawkish, one would think. But they sort of reaffirmed their commitment to yield curve control policy and announced a policy review, no major surprise there, but one that would take between 1 and 1.5 years. And that time schedule, a very leisurely time schedule to say the least, suggests the Bank of Japan simply is not convinced yet that inflation is embedded sufficiently to semi-normalize policy, or wants to make sure that the banking system and all players are thoroughly ready for it by the time it finally does move. So that was a very dovish signal. And then it really got set on fire further. So I snapped the chart you can see on slide 4, the dollar yen chart there, clearing that April high of 135 plus and another 30 or 40 basis, pips higher at times since I snapped that chart. But and that was on the press conference where he used to get a little bit more color on his thinking. And it's clear, you know, there are a few little hemming and hawing on, yes, we may tweak policy even during the policy review, but that the Bank of Japan wants to wait until next spring's wage talk. So next year, sounds like, the, you know, of course, there was a bigger wage talk round this year. There was some of the largest gains in many years for in wages, but they just want to wait for one more round to make sure that this is happening again next year before being convinced. They have always linked their policy to wages and the ability to get sustained inflation to wage rises. And then there's still the forecast in that press conference as well that inflation is expected to head lower later this year. So it's all very dovish stuff, especially given the context of yields pulling back a little bit, the positive risk sentiment. So it's adding a bit of extra energy to this move. Look at euro yen clearing all those highs. You've got dollar yen higher, and the dollar yen move is kind of supporting the dollar broadly. So we have to see how this settles. It gets more isolated or should stay isolated mostly into yen. And for the dollar to lift off, we would get need to have something, you know, more significant happening on the economic data front that affects the Fed outlook, I would suspect. But yeah, so that was just a wrap of a very volatile session for the Japanese yen. And it is a big week ahead for the U.S. dollar, as we've emphasized, and as I'll talk about later in that roundup and look ahead at the macro calendar. But going back to earnings, Peter, so I think the general lay of the land here, you've talked about this crazy mismatch between some of the numbers we're seeing, especially some of the very confusing survey data, and what companies are actually reporting and what they're guiding for. And that was only sort of underlined or even double underlined in yesterday's batch of reports. Is that not right?
Yeah, and you can see on slide 3, we the S&P 500, we've seen a small uptick again now in the 12 months trailing operating income. And then, as I said on the podcast the other day, there seems to be a dissonance or a divergence between what the companies are suggesting that is going on in the world and what we talk about on the macro front. And, you know, we had the US GDP report signaling at just a 1% GDP, real GDP growth the other day. And I think a lot of the confusion and a lot of the differences is between understanding the nominal and the real economy. So if you think about how a company is operated and how a management team is thinking, they think in a nominal world. So right now, a lot of the companies in the world are seeing 8, 9, 10, 11, 12% growth rates because that's what they report on their revenue and it's impacted by inflation. They don't think, oh, real GDP growth have slowed down and, you know, it's not how they work. So if you read through all the company statements, most of the companies I've read, they either maintain or increasing their guidance or they're maintaining their investment levels. And, you know, as Caterpillar said yesterday, I mean, things are looking better than we just thought it would be just 2 or 3 months ago. So there's definitely something there. I mean, and we talked about the advertising spending seems like it's turned a corner. I would say, and that's from an equity perspective, I'm not taking any macro indicators into account here. Just based on what the companies are saying, I would suspect that economic growth will improve and actually accelerate a little bit here over the next 3 to 6 months. From what I'm reading, it could be that companies are totally wrong in how they're assessing the world. That has happened before. I think going into the great financial crisis, a lot of companies did not really see how bad things would be, making very silly forecasts about the future way into 2008. So companies can be deadly wrong. If you go to slide 7, so the two big earnings releases, and you mentioned Intel, John, Intel was the one that they really reacted the most last night after the close. So shares were up 5%. They beat on revenue and earnings, and the guidance for the current quarter we're in were actually above consensus estimate, especially on the revenue side. Right now, they have some issues with profitability, especially on the growth margin. There are demand weaknesses. You have lower factory loadings because the volume that are flowing through their factories are below what they expected. So that is impacting the things. But they do expect a recovery both in factory loading, growth margin, and in consumer demand markets in the second half of the year, modestly, as they say. But it seems like things are stabilizing here and are turning a corner based on their indicators. Amazon beat in Q1 and both earnings and revenue. Initially, the share price rallying 2%, but then it turned around as the market sort of chewed on the Q2 guidance, which were weaker than estimated, both on the operating income and revenue. And then comments around the cloud, the AWS business, the growth slowed to 16%, but then they also said the figure so far for April is indicating a further growth slowdown. And for those of you that are listening to the podcast we had when we went through the Microsoft numbers, the Azure business, which is their cloud business, not a complete one-for-one comparison with AWS, but close, they're expecting 26 to 27% constant currency growth rate in the current quarter. So it seems like Amazon is losing a little bit of ground here to some of its competitors. We also recently had good news from Google in the cloud industry.
All right, I'll save your earnings preview. It's a long list for next week. It's barely slowing down at all, the earnings stream next week, and there are a couple of oil majors reporting today. Just wanted to round off the other markets. Ole, you have some thoughts here on grains, where we're looking at the wheat price. Fortunately, I would say this is an inflation area. I'm certainly glad it's not happening. Maybe it's not great for some farmers that are earning money from for crops, but for the rest of the world.
Yes, we're seeing some anti-inflationary pressures coming in from the food food sector still, apart from sugar, which is trading at the highest level since 2011. But I just put in this, we call it stretchometer, basically just highlighting the RSIs across the commodity space. And you can see this, we got some oversold conditions starting to build up in the grain space once again. No wonder when you look at something like wheat, where we just seen a continuous fault now this week, ample supplies and prospects for increased production around the world, both in Canada, Europe, Russia, the US is looking up as well. So we're heading into the planting and growing season with the outlook for ample supplies. So obviously, we need to see a major change in the weather in order to rattle that. So the upside potential, perhaps at this stage, seems limited in the green space. But the softs is really where all the power has been this month. And as you can see, the sector as a whole is up almost 15%.
Okay, now Peter, we have a busy earnings day today for a Friday. A couple of oil majors focusing on there. Mercedes-Benz out today, and I think let's talk just very shortly about that. You had a comment about the German car industry and maybe their attitude towards China, as Germany is notoriously protective of its industry, as it's such a significant part of its economy, the production side of its economy. And I saw another story this morning that there's ongoing talks now between China and Germany, because Germany's considering banning the export of some specific chemicals that are needed for advanced semiconductor manufacturing. So just a very interesting note along the lines of our Q2 fragmentation outlook. But what was your comment on your thoughts there about the German car industry and the signs that you're seeing about them? Maybe being concerned, I suppose, about the import. Is it the import of actual Chinese low cost but very high quality EVs into Europe that is the specific issue?
Let's if we start with the Mercedes results this morning, because they have reported. So they basically confirming that despite Europe, we were talking about potential recession or not, things are improving in Europe. Energy prices have eased a lot, and you can see the consumer behavior is improving. Mercedes is actually reporting pretty okay. Sales figures up 7%. Deliveries might exceed the guidance, they say. And then they have an interesting comment before I go into the fragmentation game. So they say they are observing healthy electric vehicle margins, but they see them as structurally lower than an internal combustion engine. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very interesting commentary right there, because that's not the signal Tesla has tried to, it's not the narrative that Tesla has been trying to build around EVs. They keep saying that it's that you can have higher margins, and that's also what it looks like for now for Tesla. But maybe as competition heats up in EV, that will change. What I sort of have been thinking about is that you can see in recent commentary, and you also mentioned it, John, with the chemical story, that Germany is very, very quickly changing its opinion about China. So Germany has been, you know, really one of the big beneficiaries of globalization. They have had this very neutral and passive, you know, foreign policy. Geopolitically, they were having a lot of tailwinds. Then came the war in Russia. They had to break up that relationship and finding new supplies for energy and metals, and they changing their economy around that. But they've always tried to keep a good relationship with China. They have always, you know, exported a lot of advanced machinery that China used to build, you know, very light manufacturing components or consumer goods that were then exported back into Europe and the US. But what has really happened over the past year, and we talked about it the other day, I can't remember whether it was the FT that had a very, very beautiful chart showing the rapid expansion during the past 2 years in exports of cars from China. It's driven by the EVs in particular. And and China is now, I think, I can't remember whether they're number one or number two in terms of export of cars in the world, becoming a real threat. And I actually think that the world realpolitics works is that China was never really a threat to some of the higher value added industries in Germany, but now they are. And that means that it changes the underlying dynamics, the conversations that the corporate leaders will have with politicians in Germany. I'm absolutely sure. And I think it's also one of the reasons why China is trying to smooth things with France, but also they have had these envoys to Germany because they sense that things are changing. And I actually think that there's nothing you cannot do. You cannot threat the German car industry. It's too important for the
it's
economy.
It's existential.
And
yeah.
I think it will change. It's existential. I think it will change Germany's behavior massively, and it will align Germany much faster than we thought with the, not only Europe, but even more importantly, I think, with the standpoints of the US. And you're seeing the change as well in the Netherlands with the whole discussion about ASML. Should ASML even be allowed to sell their extreme ultraviolet machines to China?
Really cool points and a great exposition of your idea there. Let's look for news items that confirm that. We'll have to, again, see further confirmation of that in our fragmentation game theme and overlay and filter on news events as it develop. But back to the earnings watch this week. So ExxonMobil and Chevron, they're probably not enjoying the drop in crude oil prices. I don't know what the refinery margins are. Maybe not so great either, Oleg. But they're reporting today, and then there's a whole raft of companies reporting next week as well.
Yeah, so the refinery margins, as Ole has talked a lot about in recent weeks, definitely will hit the results of both ExxonMobil and Chevron. Chevron going to be hit a little bit harder than ExxonMobil. They have a different mix in their business. But if you look at the forward expectation, I mean, we're still talking about ExxonMobil, you know, generating free cash flow that currently would give them a free cash flow yield of 8-9%. So it's still an industry that I expect to deliver good shareholder returns despite the lower prices right now. If we look ahead, I won't go through all of them. I will only highlight a few to watch for next week. I think AMD, I think interesting, given the AI talk and that we only talk about NVIDIA, but I think actually AMD has done some very, very interesting things lately on the chip side and is gaining ground in that industry. So we'll be watching that. I think on the banking side, I think a banking report on Wednesday from BNP Paribas, the most influential bank here in Europe, obviously is going to be important to track. And then the big day is on Thursday, where Apple will steal the show, and that will be after the close. But there, as you can see, in highlighted in blue, there a lot of interesting earnings, and we'll go into deeper details when we get to the podcast on Monday.
All right, indeed, and we have a busy week ahead and a fairly busy day ahead as well on the macro calendar. Just roll forward to slide 9. You can see we have apparently ECB President Lagarde out speaking. I didn't check what the context was. Usually you have a lot of radio silence ahead of big ECB meetings, which we have on Thursday next week, of course. But after that, we have the German CPI numbers, and we've been getting some other CPI color in this morning. That's important, but as well for their decision making, where the market is a bit split on whether they go 25 or 50. The market expressed expectations are leaning, you know, far more strongly in favor of only a 25 basis point move, with a 20-25% probability of a 50 basis point move. PCE inflation data point today. That one is important. And I think a bit more energy around this. And one of the reasons that yields rose yesterday was that the GDP core PCE, so there's very confusing, there's a core PCE, a number that is reported as a component of these GDP estimates, was at 4.9% at an annualized rate in Q1. That's hotter than the 4.7% expected and the 4.4% in Q4. So you have essentially core inflation accelerating in Q1, according to the first estimate of GDP. Will that be reflected in this in the March number here? We'll see. But look for that. Surprises at the core is really where the key is there for a surprise. I think it really would set this yen situation further on edge if we see a hotter than expected core number out of the U.S. And it's the last inflation data point. We'll get ahead of the FOMC meeting next week, where the market is heavily leaning for a 25 basis point move. And again, regarding your comments on whether the U.S. economy could be reaccelerating here, the market is still pricing this as the final rate hike, and the Fed will be cutting by September or November. So pretty bold statement the market is making about where the economy is doing and what the Fed is doing by later this year. But as you can see, further data points next week include the ISMs, the employment report on Friday, an RBA meeting as well. They're expected to hold their rate, and Norges Bank on Thursday. I wonder if they might start to get a little bit edgier on show the unease that they ought to have about the status of the Norwegian krona, and maybe surprised with a bigger hike. We'll have to see what's going on in the context of that meeting next Thursday as well. But plenty on the calendar, both for today, but especially next week. And I think it's going to be a volatile week as we work into some holidays in Asia as well. China is offline Monday through Wednesday, and Japan Wednesday through Friday. So Japan will be nervous because they'll be going away from the office ahead of all these key releases that could further affect interest rates. In any case, have a great weekend when you get there, and we'll be back next week with a Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.